welcome to episode 62 of Fly Away, a weekly podcast from Outlander Travel about the thing we love most, travel. Each week, we'll talk about different adventures and vacation options out there, some local, some more exotic. Join us as we chat about our own travels and those of our clients. Hopefully, our talks will help you dream, plan, and get out there. My name is Sandy, and this week, I'm joined by fellow Outlander travel agents, Andy, Lindsay, Amy, and Elizabeth. Last week, we asked Elizabeth to share her recent experience with river cruising. But with all the information to share about the ship itself, we had to break out the itinerary she sailed for a separate podcast. So tonight, we would like to ask her experience about cruising the Rhine. So let's get started. So where did you start?
So this one started, when you do the Rhine, you generally would either start in Basel or in Amsterdam.
And so where's Basel?
Basel is in Switzerland. Okay. It's basically in Switzerland, France, Germany, right up there in the corner.
Okay. The actual border goes of France and Switzerland goes right through the main train station. You have to go through immigration at the train station.
So it's like Carowinds. You can stand in North and South Carolina at the same time. And actually the Basel Country Club is in France. So yeah, it's all, and that is the top of the, what, I don't know river terminology.
It's the head of navigation.
Head of navigation. So even though then you journey to Amsterdam, which is north, you're actually going down river when you go down the Rhine, because Basel is much higher than Amsterdam and water flows down. It's a gravity thing.
Not always. The Ohio River does not. It flows north.
Well, in this case.
I'm not sure if it's, one of the three rivers in Pittsburgh flows north, but I think it's the Ohio.
Well, this flows north as well, but it goes from high ground to low ground. That's what.
Oh, that's what you're talking about.
Yes.
Okay.
But you're still going north on the globe, right? Yeah, going from the mountains. Yeah, because Basel definitely is much higher sea level than Amsterdam, which is actually below sea level. Yeah.
Yep. And the Rhine River is one of Europe's busiest rivers, both from commerce and tourism. It's got a lot for everybody, something for everybody. Basel's a very different city from, say, Amsterdam or Strasbourg, or, there's a lot to see, lots of castles.
That's what I was going to say. So if you're like people that you want to go see castles, you want to do the Rhine?
Oh, yes.
Over any, okay.
One or two castles.
it's interesting because before I went on this trip, I asked Andy a lot of questions about it because he knows this part of the world really well. And he was talking about the Rhine Gorge and how beautiful it was. He said, well, a lot of the castles are ruins. Maybe. I mean, I guess they are, but they don't look like it from the, it's not like it's just like little pieces of a castle. There's still, probably if you walk through them.
A lot of the fortification structures still standing.
Yeah.
And they're not inhabited or really used for anything more. I mean, very few people live in them. Although, I was reading an article, there was an American soccer goalkeeper called Casey Keller actually ended up playing in Germany, and he decided that he was going to be there for 2 years. And he said, well, what could be cooler than bring my whole family over here? And he actually stayed in a castle on the River Rhine for 2 years. He said, it's just going to be the best experience ever. He said it was a nightmare to get in and out of, but the whole experience was just fantastic. So a lot of them are lived in, but a lot of them have sort of visited by for tourists. A bit, you can go up there and visit them and wander around, and they have sort of restaurants and cafes up there.
And some are hotels now too.
And some of them are hotels.
So cool.
Yeah. But I mean, some of them date back to the 1200s and 1300s.
So one of the really cool things about the Rhine too is that as you travel along the Rhine, you encounter places that have been France and have been Germany and have been France and have been Germany and have been France. So the way we proceeded, we actually started in Switzerland, and then although the ship was docking in Germany on the way up, we were visiting French towns. So we went Switzerland, then France, then Germany, then Amsterdam, the Netherlands. So it was sort of a multicultural, multi-country tour on one river.
Yeah, lots of languages too, right?
Yes, lots of languages. Oh. Yeah.
So you get there. I know one of the things about river cruising is that your excursions are included. Is there an excursion on day one? Did you get to do anything in Basel?
It's part of the so you can book a pre-cruise package, and in that case you do an excursion. Now, can you do anything while you're... Yes, you can go wander around. You can freely come and go from the ship as you'd like. You basically can leave the ship and then come back whenever you want, as long as they tell you what time to be there and you need to be back. And they will.
Just like ocean cruise.
Yes, yeah, just like
ocean cruise.
Now, I will say the difference is if they do leave you, it's not that difficult for you to get to the next place. It really doesn't take you long at all. Yeah. So unlike, you don't have to fly a helicopter to get to the next location.
Were the towns that you ported in, were they like I'm picturing these awesome old towns, like just like villages.
Yeah.
Is that what they're like?
Well, some of them. I mean, you know, when we stopped in, I believe it was
Nassau.
I believe it was Strasbourg. And again, I talked to Andy about this. We stopped in, it was at Kiel, Germany. Is
that,
yeah, which is really not, I mean, it's industrial. And so I couldn't really step off the ship. Now, maybe there was something further in that was more storybook, but, you know, Strasbourg was a bus ride away. It was possible to get there on foot, but it was a bit of a trek. So yeah, sometimes we were right there, you know, docked right up next to a town in Cologne. We were right next to the chocolate museum. And I mean, sometimes we were right there, and then sometimes we were a little ways away. So we weren't always completely city center. But yes, and, you know, just sailing along the Rhine, some of these towns are just, it looks right out of a fairy tale.
Would you be like an ocean cruise? You can just top off and grab a taxi and go somewhere. Would you do that? Like, are people doing that?
Yeah, you can. And you might not be able to just hop off and do it, but you can talk to the cruise manager and arrange for some sort of transportation. Yeah, he'll make sure, you know, he'll call somebody in town. They know people. They know people. And so you could say, well, I really just want to go get like the best pretzel in town, and they'll just tell you where to go and
awesome.
Maybe send you on your way. Yeah.
So this itinerary feels very, World War II history, you know, heavy to me. So, and when I was doing my training for Viking, I remember reading about the town that, where they tried the Nazi war criminals. Do you remember what town is that, Andy?
Nuremberg.
So did you go there?
No, that wasn't on this one. Yeah, that's a little bit far. It's a little far from the Rhine, yeah?
It's actually more on the Rhine-Main Canal.
There is a stop
on some itineraries, more sort of the east-west, sort of Danube going, I think you can go from Vienna to Nuremberg.
And that is the thing. We weren't always on the Rhine. We were sometimes on little, you know, shoots of it or whatever. But we did. We certainly experienced World War II history. And I actually don't have the name of this bridge in front of me. Maybe I can find it. But there was a bridge that was sort of the last stand in World War II.
Is that the Bridge of Rheinmagen?
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah.
It's really fascinating because the Nazis set it for it to explode so that the Allies couldn't cross over, and the explosives didn't go off. So basically, I think Churchill said that it probably made the war about 6 months shorter because they were able to get across it.
They were able to get across, and it was, you know, pretty hairy, but because there were snipers shooting at them as they were trying to cross.
Yes, and it was eventually destroyed. So there were certainly casualties there. It's not like they just walked across and said, "Hey, we're here."
I mean, Second World War obviously plays a large role in this itinerary. I mean, Strasbourg was bombed, and Cologne was pretty much destroyed. And obviously you got the bridge over Rheinmagen and lots of things, I mean, because it was right in the heart of the battleground. But you've also got the Franco-Prussian War. When you're talking about France and Germany swapping portions of this land back and forth, that was all due to the 1871 Franco-Prussian War. Alsace became Elsass and was German-speaking, primarily been French-speaking before.
It was in a matter of just a like generation. So somebody's grandmother would be born German, and then, you know, they would be born French. It was literally like, having never moved, having lived in the same house. So.
I spent 6 months at the university in Mulhouse, which is about 45 minutes south of Strasbourg. And the Germans call it Mulhausen, the French call it Mulhouse. The Alsatian dialect, do you ever hear anybody in Strasbourg that's trying to speak? The French sounds German. It's very, very strange. It's really sort of heavily influenced. And it's why it's got such a beer brewing culture. Well, in France, you don't really think of beer, but you've got Kronenbourg, you've got Fischer, all of which you can get here in the States, but, you know, they are from Alsace, and it's not just the wine that you associate sort of that part of the world, but it's very much a beer brewing culture as well.
Nice job slipping that in there, too.
Well, and while we're there, let's just say that if you know, like Riesling is a wine that I do not generally drink here. It's not something I really care for, but it's much drier, the actual true Riesling of that region. I brought a bottle home with me, actually.
I like Riesling.
Do you? Well, maybe you would like this one. It's in the refrigerator. Maybe you guys should come over sometime. We're not going to drink it between the two of us. That would just be selfish. But, you know, food-wise, too, the Alsatian tart and, you know, the tart flambé. Which is sort of a pizza, but super delicious.
Sort of. Very, very tasty.
And the area is also known for foie gras. So, Amy, you would definitely enjoy.
Oh, Chris would love that.
and go during the Christmas markets. That was the, you know, when I went, everything was just being set up. None of the Christmas markets were open. So I could see all the signs for all the fantastic food and I could smell them start to, you know, cook. Oh, it was torture. It was just not.
The Christmas trees would be cold.
Yeah, but Europe and the Christmas markets, I mean.
It's crisp and clear and it's just, you warm yourself up with a hot cup of Glühwein.
That's right. Glühwein, which is warm wine. Yeah, you'd be fine.
Warm hot spice wine. Oh yeah, warm the cockles of your soul.
Right down to your toes.
You said you went to Richbier. Uh-huh. That's known not really for the Riesling, but it's known for the special Alsatian wine, the Gewürztraminer. Did you try any of that?
I did, and it is sweeter.
It's got a smoky taste to it to me.
It was very good. I did. I really enjoyed it. And I was fascinated by the vineyards in that area because I've seen a lot of California vineyards. I haven't seen a lot of European vineyards at all. And the vineyards in Alsace are all the prime ones, the Grand Cru vineyards are on hills. They're on, I won't say mountain, but I mean steep inclines.
Steep sloping topography,
And it's all about how much sun they're getting and everything. That's what makes them. And so there's I want to say there's only like 12 or 14 places that can actually be considered Grand Cru because of the where they are, their location. So those are sort of prime vineyard locations.
So you learned the history of this war and the history of the wine.
Yes. Yeah, and you know, you said World War II and Andy mentioned the Franco-Prussian, but they talk about World War I as well. It's definitely seen its share of
definitely when you head down into the Netherlands, that really was, you know, the heart of some of the awful fighting in the First World War. But you've also got some of the influence of Napoleon as well. I mean, Koblenz was one of his garrison towns. Mm-hmm. He built one of the fortresses or took it over. But some of those castles are just really the Marksburg. Can you see that? You can see it right in front of you coming down the line. It's just very, very impressive. Drachenfels. It was really imposing.
Did you go to any of them? You
castles? I didn't choose to go into any. There were options. Yeah, like I didn't go to Heidelberg. That was an excursion, and on that day, I chose to go into Speyer, which is it's a German town, and had a little brewery right by the water.
So hard to decide. I'd want to do all of that.
Yeah, and I did have to pick and choose. And honestly, the reason that I chose Heidelberg, well, there were two reasons. One, I consulted with Andy before I went, and he said this is what you should do, and I trust him on that. But also, Heidelberg is a city that I probably could get back to on another, you know, it's covered on many, many tours. And Speyer is just not that.
Speyer is a little bit more off the beaten path, but it's not as touristy and it's sort of very well preserved. Mm-hmm. And sort of more an example of a provincial town. Well, Heidelberg's a big student university town and it is more easily accessible from, you know, if you fly into Frankfurt, you can get there in an hour on the train or driving. But it's very easy to get to and much probably more on the tourist route.
You know, speaking of provincial, Riekvier, I honestly came around a corner and there's a big fountain there. I took a picture of it. I put it actually on Facebook. Belle could have just come twirling out in her blue dress and the little sheep would have joined her on it. It looked, I mean, it was like, whoa. It was definitely a provincial French town. I mean, it was, I actually looked it up later to see if maybe that was the inspiration, but I imagine there's tons of little towns like that in France.
There's lots of little towns like that, not just in Alsace, but scattered throughout France.
Yeah, it was remarkable.
So I know that another one of your majors on the way is one of my old stomping grounds, the city of Cologne. And I know you moored right in the center of the city, so made it easy to get around. And isn't that just a fantastic place?
It is. It was really cold. As we moved further north, it started getting really cold. And out in front of the cathedral there is freezing. It's so cold. I don't know what. There's something about the wind there or something. It was, really brisk.
It's not selling it.
Well, but if the Christmas markets had been open.
Mogliavine and find the Kölsch beer, the local.
What are you saying? Mogliavine?
Glue.
Something to do with glue and anything. It's hot, spiced.
So did you feel like there was it was hard with the language barrier going to so many different countries?
No. You know, honestly, well, so German is like Greek to me, I guess, but I know enough now, that I wasn't complete. I could figure out very quickly what Glühwein was. It's pretty clear. I didn't know how to say it correctly, but you know, also I was on a ship that catered to North Americans. So all of our guides spoke English. They spoke other languages as well and were free to speak those languages. There were a few other languages on our ship. I heard Spanish being spoken and, you know, I didn't really, and all the places we went to had enough, you know, there, We went into a little brewery in Speyer and who spoke English and they spoke perfect English with us. She didn't mock me at all when I tried to pronounce the beer names correctly. I say try, but, and you know,
they wanted your business.
Yes. And back to the Kolsch thing, that was actually a really interesting thing. I didn't know anything about, you know, Kolsch, I've heard of it and I've had it here in the United States, but Kolsch actually, you know, has a sort of a tradition. I bought the glasses because I'm a nerd like that. It's served in these like thin glasses that are rather small. And the Germans basically say it's about three swallows worth. And so part of the whole deal in Cologne is this, like, I'm going to use the word ceremony. It's not a ceremony, but basically the wait staff are really gruff and kind of, you know, they're not super smiley and friendly. They're kind of gruff with you. And basically as you finish one, they bring you another one. They just keep them coming. And if you, and they mark your coaster to figure out how many you've had, right? So that you can pay for them at the end. If you don't want any more, you have to put your coaster on top of your glass. I'm pleased to say that I never put my coaster on top of my glass.
Did you finish them all in three swallows?
Yeah. Well, one of the glorious things about a river cruise was they did include a German dinner at a well-known restaurant in Cologne, and so the beer was included. So they weren't counting, and neither was I. But it's cool. They have these like racks that they have these full and they swing them around and no beer spills. It's like this physics experiment. It was really
cool.
It was really cool. Yeah. And they sort of slam the next beer down. There were a couple of times my glass is empty, I got to say, and that's not supposed to happen. They're supposed to have another one there, but I'm fast.
You're like, I'm challenging these guys.
I'm challenging these guys. But you're also the big American room. So I'm sure they weren't filling quite as fast as they normally would. But.
So would you say that was your favorite?
I liked Cologne a lot. You know, it was, the itinerary was really nice this way because going from Basel is actually a pretty big city, but it's not a really well-known city. And then as we moved, down the river, up, whatever, whichever direction we were going, we started in smaller towns and then we got bigger and bigger and bigger. So by the time we got to Cologne, and Cologne is actually, it's a city. Yeah. It's one of the three largest cities in Germany, I believe.
It's not one of the three largest. It's up there, though.
It's actually very cool too, because it's one of those places where they keep digging and keep finding more stuff. You know, it's a very old.
I mean, they can trace its origins back to the Roman times. Mm-hmm. And there's a Roman museum. But they found a basically intact mosaic flooring from Rome.
Mm-hmm. Right next to the cathedral, yeah.
Right next to the cathedral.
Yeah. And they've really preserved it, like, amazingly well. They've got this glass around, so you don't even have to go to the museum to see it. You can see it from outside. You can just look down this glass. So we could see that. So, yeah, so we sort of progressed into, and then our final stop was Amsterdam, which is obviously also a really large city with a lot of history. So, yeah, it was like we eased back into city life. We went into this provincial, you know, and then, yeah, it was a nice way to sort of transition through.
So what was the part of the Rhine? There was like something you guys called it on the last week's podcast.
The gorge?
Yes.
Where the castles are?
Tell me about that.
I'll let Andy tell because he knows them much better. I went ooh and aah a lot, but he knows.
Yeah, I think it's probably about a 20-mile stretch of river, but I think there's about sort of 36 castles.
Wow.
And I mean, back in medieval times, you think of Germany as this huge sort of economic superpower. It was only up until about 1870 that before that it was about 160 different princes. So every little tinpot Harry was having his own castle built back in the day because they wanted to control traffic on the Rhine. And they would levy tolls. And one of them is actually a castle in the middle of the river.
Really?
That they put chains across and your transport ship wouldn't be able to get past until you paid the toll.
They basically closed that line.
Yeah. Few miles because, you know, all these landlords, these princes and barons and what have you were levying taxes on people on the trade. And so all these castles just sprung up and there's lots and lots of all different styles in some pretty poor state of repair, some beautiful, all dating over a period of about 400 or 500 years. So it's just incredible. And the scenery in it, it's sort of steep sloping sides. You've got vineyards pretty much coming right down to the riverbank, little settlements, little villages. with sort of the, you see the pointy spire of the church and then all the sort of half-timbered houses like Rüdesheim or Boppard or somewhere like that. And then you've also got sort of a lot of these sort of big monuments. You see Germania is a great big statue. You see just above Rüdesheim, this big statue of a woman representing Germany. It's just really, really impressive what they have going on. And then what most Germans sort of think about that stretch of river is the Lohr legend of the Lohr Lie. Is anybody here sort of familiar with that?
Me.
I don't know the story very well, but basically Lorelei is a beautiful woman who sings and lures sailors, kind of a mermaid kind of character.
A siren.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so there would be these ship accidents there, and they would blame it on the Lorelei. It's a big rock, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like right on the bend in the mm-hmm. river, and now there's a little statue of some mm-hmm. sort of mermaid siren type mm-hmm. woman there.
Blame it on the women.
Yeah. Well, and that actually.
There's been songs written about it. I mean, whenever we used to take like the public boat when I ran my tours there, and they'd play the song of the Lohr Lie.
Yep.
True, the Lohr Lie. And all the Germans would sing along, and all my guests were just like, "What's going on?"
our cruise manager, as we started passing it, he told the story, and then he said, "Hopefully, our captain will be able to resist the Lohr." And then, of course, the music starts up, and as we're sailing past it, you've got this Lohr Lie singing, you know, this siren song. So, and then fortunately, our captain was strong enough to get past
it. He had his earplugs in.
So, but yeah, it was apparently treacherous water, you know, sort of right. you know, an area where it's easy to have problems. So that, mm-hmm. yep.
So another thing, the timing of your trip coincided with the attacks in Paris, and I know we don't like to always talk about, you know, bad stuff, but how did you feel it being in Europe during that time?
Well, we do have an upcoming episode on traveling, political situations, so we can talk about that more. But honestly, you know, we would dock in Germany and we would go to France, and I was in France 2 days, and we'll see. The attacks were on Friday, right? And so our first stop in France was on Tuesday. And, you know, we were on a ship where the passports had already been through control. So our bus was waved through, we had our passports with us, but we did not have to present them, at all, you know, and we'd been told all the borders were closed but it clearly, you know, I think this is the thing about human beings is we deal with those things. And the people of France that I talked to, which was very limited, I didn't meet a lot of French while I was there, were very grateful for the support that the rest of the world was showing them. And it's a terrible tragedy, but then we had one, you know, terrible tragedy here the following week. You know, so unfortunately, it's part of the world we live in right now. And I felt completely safe. And there were people on our ship who landed in Paris the morning, you know, they were flying during the attacks and they landed that morning. And there were some difficulties, but nothing much more difficult than, you know, what might normally happen with transportation systems in France.
Yeah.
So
I think it's important to stay normal. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I think you shouldn't stop doing things.
And that was, you know, I will say one of the nice things, I landed in London the morning that, you know, after the attacks and listening to the BBC cover, the attacks, it was all about like, there was somebody at the train station seeing, you know, how many trains were leaving, how many people were leaving on, all the trains were leaving on time. They weren't as full as they should have been. But they were, Eurostar was giving people a chance to change their tickets or what have you. It was all about normalcy. It was all sort of, you know, can we get back to normal as quickly as possible?
Yeah.
So.
So when are we doing an Outlander trip on the Danube on the river cruise?
Oh my gosh, please.
I am ready.
So I have to.
I am ready. I am ready. We're enough for a group, right? Yeah, I would love to do that. Honestly, river cruising. I'm a total convert. I wish I could take my kids, because yeah, they want to see these places too. But
do an Adventures by Disney.
Adventures by Disney does do the Rhine. So I think that, I think part of that is because you visit so many fairy tale kind of, you know, it ties into Disney's storytelling so well.
We should also mention there's other countries and rivers and continents too that you can do river cruising. You can do Southeast Asia.
Mm-hmm.
You can do South America. There's
North America now with some of the lines out here.
Mm-hmm. Supposedly Anna has in the future the Mississippi.
Yeah.
And Viking is making noise about that as well. Anna also has partnered with that what is it called? Backroads? One of the really high adventure tour companies too. So if you really want super active, ways to see these places, because, and this is some beautiful country. So, you know, we've sort of touched on it, but the hiking and the biking and the, just, you can really enjoy this.
Well, the riverbanks along the Rhine River are really conducive to cycling. In fact, there's one day a year, they call it the car-free day in the River Rhine. It's like a 60-mile stretch of the river. They close to motorized traffic, and it's only for cyclists. I mean, cycling is very popular all over Europe anyway.
How's running?
I think we should do it, Amy.
There are races, I assure you. Yeah. You should look that up, but there's a Rhine.
I mean, as a relay.
I bet
with
there's Ryan, something.
I might think about it.
Well, I'll tell you what. You guys can run along the Rhine, and Andy and I will follow along with a beer in our hand cheering you on. How does that sound?
I think that sounds like a great idea.
Lindsay can pick whichever side she wants to be on, depending on her mood for the moment. So, yeah, I can't recommend it highly enough. I mean, I think and the Rhine was beautiful. I mean, however you want to see the Rhine, there are other ways to see it if you're really shy about getting out on the water. But I can't imagine any other way to see those castles. And, you know, it really was.
You got to see those.
Yeah.
It lessens the effects on watching it. Even from the road, you don't quite get the same experience.
Mm-hmm.
Great overview. And then you can always go back to those countries.
Absolutely.
Land.
Yeah.
So many varied things to see. As you say, you've got the industrial place around Basel and Strasbourg, there's culture Cologne, the big city, and then Amsterdam, but just all the delights that city has to offer.
Yeah, and I think you could do this either way successfully. I really liked starting small and getting bigger, but you could go the other way and start big and then just, you know, sort of go small.
Go into the storybook.
Yeah, go into the storybook from there. So, you know, and Basel is, I mean, it's a beautiful, even though it is sort of an industrial center, it's a city of science is what they call themselves. A lot of chemistry there, a lot of research goes on there. And so, but it still has a lot of that beauty of an older, town. So, yeah.
Oh, awesome. Well, okay. I'll be waiting for the group of when we're going to be there. Yeah, and the Riesling.
Come on over. I got one bottle. I didn't want to pack a lot, so I got one.
All right, guys. Well, that's our show for this week. We welcome your comments and feedback on this episode or any episode. So leave comments, visit us at outlandertravel.com, and click on podcast at the top of the page, and then you can find the episode you wish to comment on. Or like us on Facebook at facebook.com/outlanderpodcast, or you can search for Fly Away, or you can email us at info@outlandertravel.com. We would love to hear from you. On behalf of Andy, Amy, Elizabeth, Lindsay, and myself, Sandy, thank you for joining us here at Outlander Travel, and we'll see you next week. Gotta fly!